Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
It's going to be hard to make this team now.
Yeah, well, maybe not so much. Mully and Haw, we've got Ruthie Polinsky in here this morning, and we were talking about something Patrick Manley said yesterday, talked about from top down, Kevin Warren included, who's doing well at their job. It's an excellent question, And Kevin is going to have to get that stadium going, right? I went back. I was looking at the Tribune the other day. They've got just a list of stories that they have written about all the different stadium things going on. And we know that I believe this week they will get final approval on the tax situation in Arlington Heights. But they've already reached a resolution. I think three of the schools. Districts have to vote on it, but that is expected to go through. So they're kind of ready to go. They have the tax certainty that they were missing at Arlington Heights. But Kevin Warren has talked about wanting to build on the lakefront. It feels like that's going to be a no-go, though. They are not getting any support from the state. They have now looked at the Michael Reese Hospital site. That's an interesting one, but that would take a lot of money as well, and there is concern about the Metra tracks that run by there and if that would create a safety hazard for people going to games. I think there's workarounds with everything, but I'm not sure about the workaround on the lakefront because, having grown up here and spent my life watching things go on in Chicago, like Friends of the Lake do an amazing job of preserving one of the great things that we have in this city. We have built this city around Lake Michigan, and we have preserved non-commercial elements from getting too close to it. And we have a park system around there. And our city fathers did a remarkable job of, creating the skyline, the perspective you get coming in from the water. All of the ways that we have protected that have worked out, What was it? The river in Cleveland caught fire one time. Like a river catches fire.
Cleveland.
Like we've done a good job of preventing things like that from happening. I'm not saying they just throw a bunch of steel in the lake if you built there, but there are concerns about wildlife and you build a big dome, there's going to be a lot of birds flying into it. Whatever. People are very committed to preserving kind of the integrity of the park system around our Lake Michigan area in the city of Chicago, and they should be. And I think it's going to be a series that we haven't even gotten to the series of lawsuits that would come in, even if they were to get approval and tax help from the state, which the governor has called a no-go.
It feels like there's a long way to go.
Yeah.
And this goes back to my point when we were talking about the extra point, that building a stadium right now feels like that was Kevin Warren's, why he was brought to Chicago. That's his full-time job. You got to get a stadium built.
Yeah.
Now, if he's going to be helping on this head coaching search, which you don't want him half in, half out.
Right.
Because you, if you're going to have any say in what happens in the football operations, which I know Dustin is not a fan of, if you're going to have any say in what's going on with the head coach search, you need to be all in. So to make the best educated decision that you possibly can about who is the best person to lead this football team. So if you're doing that, there's only so many hours in a day, Mully.
Yeah, that's right.
And if your full-time search is going towards the head coach, who's building the stadium?
Yeah.
Or trying to get some progress. I mean, it just feels like it's always like one step forward, 17 steps yeah. back with the stadium. Yeah. And it's like, you got to get this show on the road here.
And time is money, right? You've yeah. got to get, you know, shovels in the ground. I'm not saying that they should move to Arlington Heights. I don't know how I would feel about that, to be honest with you. I like that they're downtown. I'm also not in love with where they're at. I think it can be difficult to get in and out of games at different times when, you know, unless, you know, as a sports writer, you would get there 2 hours early and you would leave a good 2 hours after the game ended. And that was very reasonable and there wasn't like a lot of problem with it. But I have also been at games and tried to get out of there and good luck to you. It is very difficult to do that in a timely fashion. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I can't even imagine getting to a point where they're close to breaking dirt, mm-hmm. where they're no. close to start. They're miles away, man.
Can I just take us all back for a moment to Hard Knocks when they're talking about the kinds of seats that they want in the suite? I mean, what a joke. Do they think we're stupid? I mean, I watched that and I thought to myself, did they write a script for this scene? Because there's no way that you're talking about the seats in the suites right now. Like, that's what we're, do you know what I mean?
But that's the kind of attention to detail you have to have for a project like this.
Well, sure.
Which is why you shouldn't be in charge of running the coaching search if you're trying to build a stadium.
Correct. But to me, it was like, don't fool us that this is where your conversations are centered right now. Like, this is, it was just, I mean, don't get me started.
No,
and also, I don't know if you want, was the new Hard Knocks out last night? Must have been.
Is that the AFC West one or whatever? Is that?
Yeah. No. And AFC North.
AFC North.
And the first episode, Molly.
I'm in the wrong part of the country.
I watched the first episode last week. There were more curse words in the first minute of with Tomlin cursing away. And it was so fun to watch. And it really just put everything in perspective about the Bears Hard Knocks. And it's so timely to sort of compare those organizations and how solid the Pittsburgh Steelers are. And even the Cincinnati Bengals, like when you watch them sort of like hold a team meeting and just talk about the way that see the operation. And, you know, it was just an obvious, of course, the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, listening to John Harbaugh, it really just to see that in contrast to what we're going through here in Chicago right now was just it's fascinating and it's entertainment too. I mean, Mike Tomlin is just a gem.
Oh, he's great.
A gem.
He's great. He's a great coach too.
Anyway, I went off.
No,
there,
the Hard Knocks thing. obviously, the Bears did not want a lot of swearing, and that was from the organization that was, I guess, that was George's desk, wherever that was. But I was told that they like there was as much swearing as you would imagine there to be at a professional football practice or in the building or whatever. Everybody kind of talks the same way that you heard last night, but all that is on the cutting room floor. They just cleaned all that up, which is super weird to me. Because it's not really an authentic look at what's going on in your organization when everybody is not allowed to swear. And it made me wonder, like, I mean, I'd like to hear a roll of all the swearing, you know. What was that movie that was an Italian movie, like Cinema Paradiso or something. And at the end of the movie, all the scenes that had been cut out of the of a couple kissing, they didn't even allow kissing on the screen. They ran like all the scene of it. It would be like you would just, we would be able to on the radio, beep, 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 beep. Like just have all the swear words for about 5 minutes. It'd be hilarious.
Oh, I really took us on a tangent there with the hard knocks.
No,
but the
funny.
Seats and the suites, the stadium, let's bring it full circle. I mean, so it just feels like there's a lot of work to do for that stadium. So
we have a texter. Two words. Floating stadium. Did you ever hear that one? That's his brainchild. He wants to build the stadium on the lake.
Like a UFO. Just floating like above the stadium.
A floating stadium. Right? Don't you want to build it on the water?
Makes all the sense in the world. And you can ride your boat up. You can have the water taxis. The friend, the whole friends of the parks doesn't have to get involved, right?
Yeah.
You can go out there. Or, you know what? Put the stadium on a cruise ship. Sail it around.
That's what his plan is. What was the bill for that? We looked into it. It was like,
I don't know,
$776 trillion, something like that. Build it on the water.
The city's got it.
City's got the money. We're just sitting on a big pile of it. Very funny, Texter.
Oh, man.
Floating stadium.
Floating stadium.
Thank you for listening, Texter.
Yeah, that's great. but yeah, Kevin Warren's got to work on that. We have a texter checking in, MVB. That would be the punter. And he should have called. He should have been the one that was texting Caleb Williams about, I got your back. Don't worry.
You won't be punting very much.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. Yeah. That was funny, and it was a funny
exchange. Cute. It was cute. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's what you want to hear from your quarterback.
That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Didn't age well.
The problem is, it's like it'll be hard to make this team. You know? It's the same kind of thing.
A lot of depth of the offensive line.
You know, I think that's really where we have to go. If we're really going to talk about Ryan Poles and people are mad that Dustin even gave him a good job, a satisfactory job, because people talk about the line. And you know, he did make moves on the line.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they all blew up on him, right? I mean, can we agree that if Nate Davis had worked out, you wouldn't be unhappy about signing Nate Davis to that contract? It wasn't outrageous. $10 million? I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not the end of the world. It's not like you gave $30 million. Well, I guess you signed him to a $30 million
deal. Has anyone talked about how he has not signed with
a team? He's not surfaced. He
doesn't want to play.
He quit. And Ryan Bates, you know, the problem there was that they couldn't get him away from Buffalo. And then they trade for him, and when he shows up, he's injured.
A lot of bad luck there.
And then you get injured again. And I think that that wasn't an outrageous move. I wonder if he could have played center because he wasn't the center in Buffalo, and the idea was that he was going to come here and be center. And I felt like, is that a repeat of what happened with Cody Whitehair? Are you going down the same road again? Is that wise? And I don't condone that they didn't draft a center. There were a couple of different opportunities they had to bring in offensive linemen. So that's sad. Darnell Wright's been very good.
Great.
And they drafted him with a high draft pick. I was hoping they'd get Javon Carter, and that would have been he is having a hell of an NFL career.
He is. I think a lot of that is the situation.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they felt they couldn't control him and they couldn't figure out how to get
him. And if
the
they wouldn't have drafted Darnell Wright, then what? I mean,
then they would have had to draft. They would have had to draft somebody and they
wouldn't
have changed the way
you
they
would
were.
Have had no,
you wouldn't.
Dunze,
no, you wouldn't. No, no chance. And I think that Kieran Amagaji is another one where you really like the qualities of the player, and you projected him to be a certain type of player. The problem was he came pre-injured, and the injury hasn't really gotten better. And I think the other element is the level of competition that he was playing at. I'm not saying he can't have a good career and he won't be a good player, but he wasn't ready to impact you and help you right away.
Right. And I don't know if that's what it is. He wasn't ready right away. So it felt like you were taking him high in the draft for what he was going to be. And also, I think when he did come in, was it the Arizona game?
Yeah.
When he did come in, you realized, oh boy, yeah, he's not ready.
He's taken and a step.
He yeah. didn't have a training camp.
No, he had nothing.
He had nothing. So yeah. it'll be interesting to see what he looks like and how he can contribute next year. But you still have a lot of work to do
yeah.
on the offensive line.
Yeah, you got and a lot of work
to do. You have, Molly, you know what bothers me about the offensive line? No killers. Like, there's no one on the offensive line that's going to just smash you, to pancake you every freaking time. And I just want a little bit more. They're all really nice guys
yes.
on the offensive line. I need a mean well, offensive lineman.
I know. Yeah. I think that Tevin Jenkins, you know, had a chance to be that guy, but he's been injured throughout his Bears career. And now he is, you know, up for a salary. I don't know how you sign him back mm-hmm. because of the injury issue. And I kind of like him as a player. I just like him when he's available. And I don't like the uncertainty of how he's going to survive a game.
Right.
So I think that take didn't age well, that it's going to be hard to make the team, just because I think he thought he was in better shape with the offensive line than he was. And like I say, you know, when you trade for a guy, when you sign a guy, when you draft a guy, you're thinking that one or two of those guys are going to be able to help you. And the fact that none of the three have really been able to impact your roster this year is probably the reason that the offensive line has done as poorly as it has.
And Coleman Shelton, I will say,
he's gotten better.
And when we say that phrase, like gotten better, like who's developed, like who's yeah. actually shown growth, it's kind of hard to talk about that, not just at the offensive line.
Yeah.
Really everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they've had some problems. You know, the defensive line hasn't improved because you lost Billings, because
Dexter was playing really well. I think Billings was really helping Dexter.
Yes, yes. But he has not stepped up, really. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't say he's made a step in his second year. You couldn't say that about Zach Pickens. You couldn't. I mean, the rookie hadn't done much. Austin Booker can't stop the run. He's you know, not a bad pass rusher, but he's a one-dimensional player. I don't know how you fit these guys in. They just need more on the defensive line. Their problem is the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And, you got your own first-round pick. You got your own second-round pick. You got the Carolina Panthers' second-round pick, which is a very high second-round pick. It was almost like the end of the first round. So with those picks, you should be able, that in a free agent period, you should be able to bring in guys that can – line up and play and hopefully protect your quarterback better than he has been. But I'm worried about the quarterback. I'm worried about the number of hits he's taken. I had a friend of mine, I talked to a guy in the league who said, when are they shutting him down? And I was like, they haven't really talked about shutting him down. And he's like, they need to shut him down.
Can't shut him down.
Can't play him the last couple games of the year because he won't be there to start the season.
Oh, come on.
That's what the guy said to me.
He can't shut him down.
He's a personnel guy in another.
I hear you. And I'm sure that's a take.
Yeah.
But you're going
to. Well, they're out of the playoffs. You know,
this is a rookie quarterback who's not perfect.
Like, I know.
He has so much to learn. And Molly, you're telling me that going up against the Lions defense, the Vikings defense, Seattle, sure, and Green Bay, those four games aren't going to make Caleb better?
Not if he's sacked seven times a game.
Right. Well, I think he also needs to be better too.
Like I said, when the coach was up in the booth, they seemed to be getting rid of the ball a little bit faster. They seemed mm-hmm. to be. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of things connected to it. But yes, you do need to get rid of the ball. You cannot get sacked on three of the four third downs in the first half of the game.
Right.
Three of the first four third downs. That's just not how you convert a third down,
right.
Murphy,
right.
Score has learned.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
I know.
So I don't know, you know, and you can't keep getting them into bad distance third downs.
Right.
So I don't know what the answer is, but.
But don't you think if you take them out as a coaching staff, you're almost like throwing in the towel, like, we can't develop him the rest of the way, so, and we can't make him better, and we can't develop the offensive line. Like, that's an admission of guilt.
No question about that, but if he's getting sacked 7-8 times, you got to get to that hook earlier.
Right.
I mean, I just don't want this kid. I think he's talked about surviving the year and what it would mean for him and all that stuff. I got to tell you, man, 4 games, a long period of time.
I'll tell you what, too. If we've learned anything about Caleb Williams this year, after all the offseason speculation, what's his personality, you know, the USC, this kid is tough. I mean, he pops right up. He takes off and he runs. I mean, I can't even say it out loud. He has not been on the injury report.
Okay, this is not what we...
I'm ever... knocking on all the woods. So just... Listen, he's just tough.
I agree with you. And he has a knack for avoiding big hits. But
he's,
you know, he caught one on the sideline. He was doing that little trick where he goes to run out of bounds and then he.
That was brutal.
You can't do that. And Dan Campbell went to the officials before the game and said, we're going to label the guy. And guess what? They hit him. And he was lucky not to get hurt on that play. And don't do that again. Don't do that again.
Right.
Can't have that happen.
Right.
Okay, we got to get to Dan Wiederer. We'll ask Dan about some of this stuff. It is Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky, in this morning on The Score.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials. You got a guy with some qualifications. And now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky, kind enough to sit in this morning. And it's always a joy to talk to our buddy Dan Wiederer. And he joins us now on the Aturo Hotline. Your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. And Dan, I know we won't hear from everybody till tomorrow, but do you anticipate a lot of big energy and positive vibes in the building and then smiles galore?
I don't. I really don't.
Thank God.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. It just feels like a building that's totally broken right now, and I don't know what the process of putting it back together is, but certainly they've got to figure that out. The one thing that I've been emphasizing really since the day after Thanksgiving is that we're a long way from the finish line of the regular season. 4 games in the NFL is an eternity, and they've got to play 4 more games, and you can't put forth the performance like you did on Sunday in California and expect to stop the humiliation, stop the embarrassment, stop the losing streak. And so somebody's got to find something deep within them here in this next stretch to hopefully get this thing turned in a more positive direction.
Dan, I don't know if you have really tried to come up with a reason as to why the team looked so different on Sunday in San Francisco. Do you attribute that to sort of maybe the coaching staff and all the changes and maybe Thomas Brown being slightly overwhelmed and unprepared, new defensive play caller? Where do you kind of find the source of what was so broken on Sunday?
Yeah, it's all of that. I think Caleb tried to say it as diplomatically as possible after the game on Sunday, where he was like, you know, when you take a guy who's your passing game coordinator and then you make him your offense coordinator, and then a couple weeks later you make him your head coach, suddenly he gets a little bit more spread thin, and suddenly the rhythm of the things that you're getting used to isn't quite locked in the way it's supposed to be. And so all that flux on the coaching staff makes a difference. People are trying to get comfortable. You're down 2 bodies, right? You're down your offense play caller and your defensive play caller from the very start of the season. Add into that you're on a 6-game losing streak, and so every time you experience a little bit of negativity, it has a cumulative effect. And that psychological toll that the Bears have been going through is so very obvious. So when you get beat down in the first quarter and the first half like they did on Sunday. It's just harder to stop when you don't have that confident mindset that you're on the right track, because you've been skidding since the end of October. I think you heard some of that fatigue after the game on Sunday from some of their core leaders. You heard it again on Tuesday from Cole Kmet during his Zoom call. There is a without question, a fatigue inside that building right now, and you have to fight through that for four more games, including one on Monday that's going to be on a primetime stage against an opponent that's playing really, really good football.
Yeah, I think that the other element here, and I know no one wants to hear it, but Matt Eberflus was, at different points in this year, an elite play caller, had done a very good job with that defense. And what his gift seemed to be was limiting teams to field goals as opposed to touchdowns when they were in the red zone. And that kept them in a lot of these games. And frankly, and I know they had a touchdown call back for a penalty, and it was only 24 to nothing. It wasn't 28, but man, it felt like it was about 35. And I think that and I'm not picking on Eric Washington. This is his second go round with the Bears. He was here before. It's a really difficult role to jump into, but you're facing one of the premier play callers in the league in Kyle Shanahan, and you're trying to feel your way through a game. You're trying to play, and this guy is responding and coming at you. And I maybe the Bears forgot that the tight end position existed. I'm not sure, but it felt like every time he got the ball, he was open, and he also had space, and he's also a really dangerous, excellent player.
Right. So the Shanahan effect is real, and you watched him find his groove on Sunday afternoon in a way that was truly fun to watch, as long as you weren't heavily invested in the Bears winning a football game, because they were getting dominated by a guy who was just doing whatever he wanted as a play call. He found a quarterback that got in his groove. And it was one of those days, Molly, where from the upper reaches of the press box, you watch these plays unfold and you see, oh, here comes a tight end screen to Kittle.
Yeah.
The Bears aren't in the best position, and the ball is being thrown, and you're like, oh, this thing's blocked up for 30, and there it goes right out of the gates. And there goes George Kittle, because you see he's got a wall of escorts to take him down the field. And that happened, what they have, 7 or 8 completions of at least 20 yards in the first half. You go to halftime being outgained 320-4, and good luck trying to, I guess it was 319 after the kneel down, so they got one back there at the end of the half. But good luck trying to recover from that. And the Bears did a little bit in the second half, but it was long since over when they went to halftime.
Well, Dan, it doesn't get any easier. Minnesota Vikings on prime time. You got a Thursday night. You got a Detroit Lions. You got the Green Bay Packers. I mean, how does this look better moving forward?
Well, you just started that question with the mantra that I've been saying into the mirror for the last 2 days. Well, Dan, it doesn't get any easier.
Well, Dan.
so my efforts are to fight through that as well. I mean, look, here's the good news. You've got a longer week of preparation. You've got an opponent now. It's going to be fun to watch Caleb try to prepare for an opponent for the second time. And he obviously had success the first game they played against the Vikings. They found some answers to the things that Brian Flores throws at you. So you have a little bit of confidence there that your offense can respond to the pressure you're going to see. Well, now you've got to do it on the road. And that place is really difficult to play in. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of energy and noise that you're going to have to deal with throughout the game. Again, you've got a football team in Minnesota that's playing at a high level. And it's so interesting, guys, to kind of match up the timelines. Like, they hired Kwesi Adofo-Mensah as their general manager a day after the Bears hired Ryan Poles. They hired Kevin O'Connell as their head coach 3 weeks after the Bears hired Matt Eberflus. These were on similar timelines in terms of getting back into a groove. The Bears chose the full teardown option. Also had a reboot at quarterback. Well, guess what? The Vikings had a reboot at quarterback, and here they are now at 11-2 and playing the type of football where you say they're going to be really good for a while, a long time, as long as Kevin O'Connell's there. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Brian Flores gets another job. And so when you compare those things where Mully, you lived through this 2 years ago in Chicago, everyone was telling us that the only way for the Bears to get to the light was to tear it all down and tank and lose out. Here they are now in last place by 5 games in the NFC North, while a team that was on an identical timeline is getting ready to play in the playoffs next month.
Yeah, and you know, they had success against that team in the first meeting, but they didn't have much success. I mean, they did well against Jefferson, which is unusual. That guy can kill teams. But Jordan Addison had a phenomenal game against him, and Aaron Jones. Like, how often have we watched that guy beat the Bears? It's just, like, tiresome. Doesn't matter where he's at. I don't know how you adjust the way you played in the first game without kind of opening up a whole new problem. You see what I'm saying? Like, let's say you finally figure out how to stop the run, then the quarterback that just threw 5 touchdowns last week is gonna tear you to shreds. But you don't pressure him, and then you're going to be, it's just, there isn't an obvious answer to how you beat these guys. And even the stuff you did well on offense, you know, you can go to work on it, but the guy that put the game plan together, Brian Flores, is going to go to work at it too. Mm-hmm. And he's watching you.
Exactly.
And Thomas Brown's now on tape for a few games. Like, it doesn't get easier the more people see what your ideas are.
No, it doesn't. And from a defensive perspective, they obviously went into the game 3 weeks ago with the priority of stopping Justin Jefferson. And they did a good job on him. Now, there were a couple pass interference penalties that sort of muted the statistical production that Jefferson had. But what you do when you make that decision is you leave other guys around to hurt you. And Jordan Addison did that. And Jordan Addison continues to play really well since that football game, and has found kind of that chemistry with Sam Darnold that's making them very, very dangerous as an offense, because now you got to pick your poison and you got to figure out what is least harmful to you. And so the Bears have to put that puzzle together offensively again. Like, it is very difficult to go play in that building. And so Caleb's going to have to deal with the noise. They're going to have to figure out a way to get their run game going. They're going to have to figure out a way to keep that quick game clicking. And then you have to find answers within the game. And that's something that they've done well, for the last month, if not longer. And you're going to have to continue to be ready to adjust series by series to make sure that you're playing that chess game with Brian Flores. And oh, by the way, Thomas is also your head coach now, and he's making game decisions, and he's trying to work with the special teams. And there's a lot on his plate. And, you just hope that there's a better effort Monday than there was Sunday afternoon, because that was honestly really pretty difficult to watch.
Dan, where are you on the offensive line, Caleb getting sacked? How much should Caleb play? Mully's ready to sit Caleb for the rest of the year.
I was talking
He's
to a
done.
Guy.
He's
I talked
like,
to a
it's
guy
it.
Yesterday who said to me, what's their plan with Williams? When are they going to sit him? I'm like, what do you mean sit him? He's like, well, they can't let him play the last couple games, right? This is over.
Dan, that's crazy to me.
But, I mean, he is on schedule for 73 sacks, Dan. He's getting ready to get sacked. And if he's getting sacked 7 times a game now, somebody better wake up and realize this is not good.
Well, Mully and Ruthie, it doesn't get any easier.
That's it.
Look in the mirror.
Mantra.
These teams are playing for something. You know, you went into San Francisco, everyone forgot that team was playing for something.
No question. And so, like, look, I'm not ready to sit Caleb Williams yet. If we get to week 18 and we say, okay, look, like, you've done a lot here to get us to this point and to, you know, persevere through all the turbulence that we've put you through, we're going to give you a reward and not ask you to finish. But there's still development to be had here. There's still a lot this offense needs to do to continue growing.
There's a lot more sacks waiting for
I don't go there. I'm certainly pleased that they took him out of the game Sunday in San Francisco and didn't let him continue to take a beating in the fourth quarter, and Tyson Bagent finally got to see the field for the first time this year. But I want to see Caleb, grind through the finish of this season to understand what it's like again to prepare for opponents a second time. You've got 3 division opponents here in the next 4 games, and so that experience is truly invaluable. And I just think that, as a young quarterback, you've got to learn a lot of things that this league throws at you. Look, that sack total is way too high, and he's like 15 clear of the second most sacked quarterback in the league right now, which is stunning. And so if you're in that front office, no matter who's going to be making these decisions in a few months, you better understand that your offensive line needs to be better than functional. Like, you need to go build a really formidable offensive line. You watch what Jared Goff's doing in Detroit. You watch what he's doing it behind, and you go, that looks pretty cool. And find some maulers in the run game and some guys who can pass protect and make your quarterback's life a lot easier.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Dan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, guys, it doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, we'll let you get back to the whiteboard and consider your pick for Monday night. Hey,
I think I know what it is already, so I'll get back there and dissect it. All right, see you guys.
That is Dan Wiederer. What a good man. 312-644-6767. Is it outrageous to think that Caleb Williams is on a pitch count here? Is that a crazy thing to even suggest, even if it wasn't my suggestion, but someone said it to me? I don't know. I'm very curious to know as this goes on. I agree with what you guys are saying. Mm-hmm. You play this team a second time. There's something to build on from the first one, and you're going to play him twice next year. I see the value in it. I see the quarterback needing it, but I just look at some of those numbers and they're getting awful scary.
Dare I say that this coaching staff right now and the head coach is so overwhelmed and the general manager is so overwhelmed that they're not even thinking about this yet? Like, this isn't even probably on their radar to, like, how deep are we going to go with Caleb in terms of how many hits does he have left?
How often can you keep getting them hit? It's just a crazy thing to think about. It's Mully and Haw. We got Ruthie Polinsky, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
The most important thing is first and second down efficiency. Not taking sacks on first and second down. When you get the third down, now it's time to, because, you know, if you incomplete, if it's if there's, you know, we're short of the line or anything like that on third down, if we run the ball, if I, you know, take off, we throw, whatever the case may be. You know, taking a sack, you know, it goes into that category. It obviously matters because now you're going off the field, but, you know, incomplete, you're going off the field. You know, we run the ball in those situations and we don't get it. You know, you go off the field, you take a sack, you go off the field. So in those situations, first and second down, you don't want to take sacks. Third down is now the time to make the play. We didn't do that today.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for David today. And that is the voice of Caleb Williams. And he's talking about not taking sacks. And I'm being insulted online for being cowardly in my response to all the sacks that he has taken. You know, this is not my theory. I'm telling you, I talked to a guy in the league yesterday who asked me when they were going to shut him down.
Yeah.
That's what happened, okay? And I was surprised that he said so, but the point he made was interesting, which is the guy's on track to get sacked 73 times. I believe David Carr got sacked 76 times. It ruined his career. You know, he took a lot worse hits than Caleb is taking, but it is just a bad way to have to play with you, the hunted, and everyone coming for you. And I think he's got a real knack for avoiding the big hit, which is, thank God. But I do wonder what it is that you're going to be able to learn. I get the division games. I really do. But I think as you go on in this season and you look at the way things have gone, you know, Caleb Williams has got to be the centerpiece of this team. He is the most important player on the team moving forward. Whether anyone wants to hear that or not, the quarterback touches the ball on every offensive play. You haven't had one around here basically since Sid Luckman, who was like a World War II era quarterback, for the love of God. You know, it's no longer the 40s, people. You need a quarterback to play in the modern NFL. It looks like you got one. You're having a crisis of leadership or play caller or whatever way you want to term it. You've already gotten rid of the guy that you hired specifically to work with him. Bad hire, Shane Waldron. And now the guy that you promoted to work with him, who was doing pretty good with him, has been promoted yet again. And I don't want to hear that Caleb is partly responsible for developing himself, because that's not a good idea. But that's what we heard. You know, you got a wide receiver who's the wide receiver's coach, so don't worry about promoting him. And you got a quarterback who can raise himself, so you don't have to worry about that either. Listen, let's do everything humanly possible to help the guy.
Right. And I think a lot of that falls on, you know, the quarterback coaches and the offensive play caller and making sure that you're designing plays where this you're putting him at low risk. Get him on the move.
Run the football. Get him on the move.
Get guys open and early, like quick. Like,
Yeah, that's what they were doing when Thomas Brown first took over.
And then when you do have an opportunity to throw it downfield and you're a little afraid that you might throw a pick and it's third down, throw it. Chuck it up. Because you have really talented receivers and give guys opportunities to go make a play. Like that, you're going to have to get comfortable doing that at some point. Let it be now when the interceptions at this point don't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you are right. It was good to see them put Tyson Bagent in at the end of that game because the danger sometimes, and you know, when the Bears were close, it was a greater danger where you are now situationally forced to throw. So they're coming for him. You're having problems protecting him, but now you have to throw because you have to score quickly. And you still want to make him as big a target as he is. So Bagent came in, what did he hand off three times or something? It wasn't like you were trying to get back in the game. Everybody knew it was over. They had pulled their quarterback, Brock Purdy, and it was a counter move. Okay, you think you're going to pull our guys out. How about that? Now what are you going to do? Who are you going to sack now?
Could have been a coincidence.
Yeah, it might have been a coincidence. It was the right move, and we didn't see it up until that game. Right. So mercifully, you finally made the right move in that one. All right, we've got a lot to get to. We're going to get to Bruce Levine. We're going to go out to the owners' meetings. We'll find out what the Sox and the Cubs are doing. We'll talk to him next. It's Mully and Haw with Ruthie Polinsky here on The Score.